ups and downs, but your reaction to them turns out to be a balanced reaction or a balanced response instead of an emotional reaction. An emotional reaction, I'm at work, you come up to me and you start yelling at me for being stupid for doing one thing or another. My reaction is, I don't like this. And I'm going to take your anger and make it my anger and throw it back at you. Now you're at war, you're fighting. You're fighting not only with that other person, you're fighting with yourself because you don't like these kinds of states. So they go off grumbling and you stay there, and what happens in your mind?
Rehearse everything.
I said this and they said that, and I wish I would have said this because they're a turkey for saying it, and I'm right and they're wrong. And then it happens just like it's on a tape deck. It happens over again and over again. Now, when you get caught in this kind of emotional upset, you're not living in the present moment anymore, you're living in the past. So what happens when you have something like that happen and you get in the car and start to drive? Are you driving? Not really, you're not paying attention. That's how accidents happen. So what I teach is a way to overcome these kind of emotional responses by seeing them for what they actually are. And what I do is I teach people that if you want to find out what mindfulness is, you're going to love this. You've got to learn how to smile. And smile all the time. Don't cross your arms. This is a thinking posture. It's not a listening posture. It's protecting your heart when you need your heart open. So when I say, I want you to smile, I mean I want you to smile all the time, all day. And quite often I tell people on the list, I want you to smile for 1 week. I don't want you to do any sitting meditation. I just want you to smile all the time, every day. It improves your awareness immeasurably because when you start smiling, your mind is more uplifted and you become more happy. People start treating you in a different way when they see that you're smiling. And I mean not only smiling here, but smiling with your eyes, smiling with your mind, smiling with your heart. So you feel the smile, and you keep the smile going. People respond to you differently, they start talking to you more nicely, they start smiling back, and you notice that your mind is very uplifted and alert, and you start to have joy arising. And with that joy comes a different kind of awareness. When you have this joy in your mind is alert. Your mind is very clear and bright. And then something happens and you start to lose that joy. You notice it right straight away. Well, I don't like it. What's this? This is unhappiness in one form or another. So you learn how to be able to recognize that. That is the learning how to become mindful. Recognize how mind's attention moves from one thing to another. And it has memory in there too, remembering to observe. So what you're doing is you're training yourself to see when you have an uplifted mind and when you have a mind that's not uplifted. When you have a happy mind, when you have a sad mind. What the Buddha taught was how works so well that it's unbelievable. And everybody that I know of, when I first tell them this, they have trouble believing it. Because not only do you get to smile, but you get to laugh. When you laugh with yourself about how dumb it is to be unhappy about this, when you laugh, you're not caught by it anymore. It goes from, I'm unhappy, I don't like this, to, it's only this feeling. I don't need that feeling. So developing a sense of humor about yourself and watching your personality start to change, and watching how your laughter with things starts to change is a sign of spiritual progress. It's not some weird little thing. It's not some stupid little thing. This is something that is really important for your own well-being and happiness. Now, the Buddha, and when he was talking about the Eightfold Path, one of the major parts of that path is called right effort. There's four parts to right effort. Recognizing when you have an unwholesome state, when you have an emotional state, when you have sadness or anger or anxiety or depression, recognizing that it's there. Letting go of that and relaxing the tension caused by that mental state. Now, bring up a wholesome state. What's the easiest way to bring up a wholesome state? Smile. Keep that wholesome state going. Keep that uplifted mind going. That's what the Buddha's teaching is all about. It's about keeping your mind uplifted so you don't get caught in the mud of dissatisfaction and suffering. Now, the Buddha talked about there's four noble truths. The first noble truth is there is suffering. Anybody here not know that already? We all know that this is suffering. There is suffering in life. It happens. You're going to have some lows. You're going to have some highs. The change is suffering. There's a cause of suffering. That's the second noble truth. What's the cause of suffering? The cause of suffering is craving. Okay, what does that mean? Craving always arises as tension and tightness in your mind and in your body. It always comes up that way. So you're able to recognize, this is here, this is craving. Everybody here right now has craving in their mind. There's a tension, there's a tightness. I got it. My prop. I've got a brain here. Now, I put this line in here to show you that there's a membrane, there's a very thin tissue that goes around each part of the brain. Every time a thought arises, it contracts a little bit. And it'll keep contracting when you have feelings you don't like, and then all of a sudden you start to get a headache. In the last 30 years, I've probably had under 10 headaches in the last 30 years, me personally. Why? Because I learned that when I started feeling tension and tightness in the back of my neck and in my head, that I had to relax.
You relax the muscles.
You relax your mind. Okay, now, these, the membrane that's on this side and the membrane that's on this side, because of our past attachments, it gets stuck together. And that's a form of suffering. When you relax that tension and tightness, you will feel an expansion happen in your head. And when you feel that, there is no craving. And every time you relax that tension and tightness, the little parts that are stuck together, they start letting go. So you're letting go of past attachments. What are attachments? Attachments are the belief that every thought and every feeling that arises is me. It's mine. That's who I am. That's a false belief. The start of craving is the I like it, I don't like it mind. Now, I'll tell you how this works. What happens is a feeling arises for whatever reason. Either a feeling is a pleasant feeling, or a painful feeling, or neither painful nor pleasant. It's a neutral feeling. When it arises, right after it arises, there's this mind that grabs onto it and says, I like this, or I don't like this. That's craving. That's the start of the tension and tightness. Right after that, then there's all of your thoughts, your opinions, your concepts, your story about why you like or dislike that feeling. And then, right after that, your habitual tendency. Every time this kind of feeling arises, I always do this. Now, what is always do this? Let me explain that a little bit more deeply. We're made up of five different things. We have a physical body. There is feeling, pleasant, painful, neither painful nor pleasant. There is perception. Perception and feeling actually kind of go together. The perception is the part of your mind that names things. Your perception, your mind takes a look at this, and the perception part of your mind says, cup. Okay, so that's the part that names things. Or you say, you look at this and it's a rope. Perception said is the thing that said that. And you have thoughts, and then you have consciousness. Now, when a painful feeling arises, the first thing that we try to do is we try to think the feeling away. That's our habit. But thoughts are one thing. Feelings are something else, and the two never meet. So the more you try to think your feeling away, the bigger and more intense that feeling becomes. So, thinking about a feeling doesn't work. What does work? Recognizing that as soon as a feeling arises, there's a tension and tightness that comes up. Now, there's instructions in the meditation. And these are very, very important instructions that you need to follow if you're going to meditate. Let's say you're sitting very still, you're not moving your body at all. And then a pain arises in your knee. The first thing you'll notice is you start thinking about that feeling. I don't like that feeling. I wish it would stop. I wish it would go away. Why does it have to bother me now? Every thought about the feeling makes the feeling bigger and more intense. So the first part of the instruction is you have to recognize that that's what's happening, and then you have to let go of the thoughts about it. How do you let go of the thoughts about the feeling? You don't push the thoughts away, you allow the thoughts to be there, but you don't pay attention to them anymore. You don't keep your attention on them. Now, you'll notice that there's a tight mental fist around that feeling. That tight mental fist, aversion. I don't like that feeling. I don't want it to be there. Now, the truth is, when a feeling arises, it is there. That's the truth. Anytime you try to fight with the truth, anytime you try to control the truth, how many hundreds of times have you heard this? Anytime you try to make the truth be the way you want it to be, that is a cause of suffering. Okay? So we are the cause of our own suffering. Because we're trying to fight with the present moment. We're trying to say, I don't like this the way it is right now. I want it to be different. So, what to do? We have to allow the present moment to be there, even though it's a painful thing. It's okay for it to be there. It has to be okay because that's the truth. So you say, okay, that feeling can be there. Fine. Now you'll notice there's some tension and tightness in your head, in your mind, and you relax, and you feel that expansion. And then you'll notice something else. There's no thoughts. There's only this pure awareness. This is what the Buddha called pure mind. This mind has no craving in it. That's the third noble truth. Okay, that's the cessation of craving. Now you bring that pure mind back to your object of meditation. Okay? It might stay there for a minute, it might stay there for 5 seconds, who cares? It might go back to the sensation again. Probably it will, because the sensation is big and it's there and it's real. So it pulls your attention back. Now the question in meditation is, how did your mind go from being on your object of meditation to your me? How did that happen? Not why. We don't care about why. In Buddhism, we care about how did mind's attention move from one thing to another. How did this process work? Now, as you bounce back and forth between this pain and letting it be and relaxing and smiling and coming back and staying with this for a minute and going back again, as you become familiar with that process, you start to see that there are little things that happen that you've never recognized before. So right before your mind gets stuck on that sensation, you see there's something else that happened right before that. And you relax and let it go. And now this sensation doesn't bother you so much anymore. Now you're starting to get equanimity. You're starting to get balance of mind. You're starting to allow the present moment to be there without resisting it, without fighting it. And when you do that, you start developing this mind that is content, even though there's a painful feeling that's there. What's the definition of content? I looked it up in the dictionary. It says happy. Contentment means happiness. How can you be happy if you have a pain in your knee or your back You can be happy because you're not resisting it. You're not fighting with it. You're allowing it to be there without that tension and tightness. You're not causing yourself more and more pain because you wrap your mind around it and try to control it. Try to control your feelings with your thoughts. When you let go of the thought, then the feeling can be there and it's okay for it to be there. Now, what will happen is that feeling will either go away by itself or it won't. But if it doesn't go away, what happens is your mind becomes so balanced with it that it doesn't even pull its attention to it anymore. Ignore it. Now this sounds like a great thing. This sounds like it's really something. It's real simple to talk about. And it takes a lot of work to do. One of the objections an awful lot of people have when they come and they hear me talk is they say, it's too simple. Nothing is that simple. It's simple to talk about. It's not simple to do. It takes a lot of effort. But every time you let go of a distraction and you allow it to be there and relax into it and smile and come back to meditation, it improves your awareness of how mind's attention moves. As you get deeper in your awareness, you start seeing different things and you start teaching yourself how to become enlightened. See, I don't teach you. I don't teach enlightenment. I'm just a guide. If I see you're going off the path, I'll mention it to you. You better believe. But if you're doing everything fine, I just sit back and say, you're teaching yourself some wonderful lessons. Great. Everybody teaches themselves. I had a student in Malaysia, and she was talking to one of her relatives who was a born-again Christian. And every time they got together, they were talking about religion, and she was starting to go deeper into her practice, and she was starting to be more profound with her insights on how mind works. And finally, the relative said to her, why is it that all Buddhists are so intelligent? And she said, I don't know how to answer that. I'll talk to my teacher. She came and asked me, why are we so intelligent? Because you're teaching yourself. It's interesting. It's fun to learn. It's fun to see how we cause ourselves so much suffering. And how we don't have to do that. All we have to do is change some old habits of every time this feeling arises, I always get mad. Every time this feeling arises, I always get sad. Well, being able to recognize that, then you can let it go. And you see more and more clearly how mind works. And it's exciting, and you become more intelligent. Something that happens with religion, this is just a general thing, is that you start getting interested in religion and you start getting serious. And that's the opposite of what religion's trying to show you. Religion's trying to show you how to be happy. And the one that works the best for me is what the Buddha taught, because he was the clearest on how to let go of craving, how to recognize that tension and tightness. just gave a retreat in Joshua Tree for 2 weeks. There was a lady that had gone from never experiencing meditation. She'd done a lot of other things. She'd done a lot of psychobabble and all of this kind of thing. But she had never sat down and did any meditation. And in 2 weeks, she got to a place where she could see where mind just started to have disturbance, and she could let it go right there. And she experienced what real peace of mind is, without any disturbance, without any kind of distraction pulling away. Amazing. It's truly amazing. All of these different levels of your understanding, they cause you to have a different kind of experience. And your mind starts to be lighter, more natural. Your mind starts to be more clear. And this lady, she said, you know, I was walking around in a world that was gray. I never really noticed any colors. Now, we're in the desert. There's not much in the way of color in the desert, but unless you really look. There's little, teeny, tiny flowers that are happening right now. And she'd never seen them before. There's purples, and there's greens, and there's pink, and there's yellows. And she'd never noticed them before. She came like it was some kind of revelation. That the world is in color. But she'd been walking around with a mind that was very tense, very tight, and she was caught in her thinking, continually caught. I showed her how to let go of that thinking. And as she did that, she taught herself how she was causing her own pain by her views, by her concepts, by her holding on to negative mental states and identifying with, this is me, this is mine, this is who I am. Now I have a question. If you're sitting and all of a sudden sadness arises, did you ask it to come up? Did you say, we say sadness, it can be anger, it can be depression, it can be sadness of whatever degree. It can be fear. Did you ask these things to come up? Did you sit there and say, you know, I haven't been mad for a long time? No. It happened by itself, right? It's not yours. You didn't ask it to come up. Can you make it stop? Not really. You can't make it go away. It's going to stay there as long as you keep giving it attention. Eventually it will fade away a little bit and you'll forget it. But the opposite of what we're doing is forgetting. That's the opposite. What we're trying to do is get you to remember. Remember what you're doing in the present moment. Now let's go back to the scenario of the person that comes up and gives you anger and you give it back and then you fight with them for a little while. And then you have all these repeat thoughts. Anytime you have repeat thoughts, guess who's causing themselves suffering? Guess who's causing themselves pain? Repeat thoughts are a classic example of attachment, of identifying with these thoughts and feelings and making them yours personally, and then trying to control them. repeat thoughts and you're grumbling about that for a little while, and the next person that walks up to you, how nice are you to them? See, it starts affecting your mood. It starts affecting the way you see the world around you. And you start getting in a negative cycle. And you go home, you've had a rough day at the office, and you tell everybody around you, leave me alone, I've had a bad day. And you go to sleep and you toss and you turn and you don't get really good sleep. And you wake up the next day and you're tired. And you go into work being tired. And you start seeing things in a more negative aspect. Not liking things around you so much. Fighting with things around you. That's what one experience that happened yesterday, early in the morning, is affecting you and your world around you. And it can affect you for 3 or 4 or 5 days. I knew one lady that she would get angry at something that her husband did or said, and she would stay angry for 2 weeks. Now that's a long time to hold a grudge and make yourself suffer. When she first came to the monastery, as soon as she walked in, I wanted to walk out. She had such a heavy cloud around her. And she came to see me, so I couldn't get out. But she told me she got in an argument with her husband, and her husband says, I'm not going to ever talk to you again. And he didn't. And it really made her mad. She said, what am I supposed to do with this? Well, the only thing you can do with it is start sending love into the situation instead of hate. Now, she stayed with practicing with me for 5 years. Over the 5 years, her anger went from being angry for 10 days, for 2 weeks, 14 days, to being angry for 10 days, to being angry for 7 days, to being angry for 3 days, to being angry for 1 day, to being angry for a few hours, to being angry for a couple of minutes. Now that's how her progress worked, by practicing loving kindness meditation. The reason it took her 5 years is because she had 3 kids. She only could get up at 5 o'clock and practice for a half an hour before the kids got up and she had to start taking care of them. So she could only practice for 30 minutes a day. So her progress wasn't very fast. When you come and you practice and you do a retreat, your progress is amazingly fast. It's so fast it'll blow your mind. That's how fast it is. For example, I had one friend. He's been my friend for over 30 years. He practiced meditation and yoga a lot longer than I ever had. And he came and he wanted to do loving kindness meditation. But he is a publisher for books. And he's used to thinking. He's really into his thinking. And he kind of lost touch with feeling in his heart. So I told him to start practicing loving kindness meditation, and he just couldn't get the feeling consistently going. So I said after 2 or 3 days, okay, stop. We don't want to do this meditation because it's not working for you right now. It doesn't mean it won't work in the future. It just means right now, let's do mindfulness of breathing. Now, he went back to his mindfulness of breathing. On the in-breath, you relax. On the out-breath, you relax. There's a distraction, you let it go, you relax, you smile. Come back to your object of meditation. That is smiling and breathing and relaxing. The first sitting, after changing his meditation, he got into a job. The next day, he comes for the interview in the afternoon. I said, "How's your sitting?" He said, "This is the most fantastic thing I've ever run across. It really, really works." And I said, "Always before, when he was doing loving kindness, how long are you staying with loving kindness before? Your mind gets distracted. Oh, a minute, minute and a half." Now, one day after I changed to mindfulness of breathing with him, "How long are you sitting before your mind gets distracted?" 15 to 20 minutes. "Tell me what your experience is. What have you gone through here in the last little bit?" He'd gotten into the fourth jhana. He became an advanced meditator in a day and a half. Now, he had all this past practice. And it's not that one practice is right and one practice is wrong. It's just, if you've been doing this practice, and I come along and I say, "Add this little extra step and see what happens." The relaxing and letting go of that craving. All of your past experience comes into play. And when you add this extra step, all of a sudden you explode. And you have this wonderful meditation experience that you never realized. How deeply you can go in the meditation. By having this extra step of relaxing, it changes the meditation. And it changes it in a very positive way, and your understanding really starts to blossom, and you start really knowing what you're doing. So he was one happy camper after 1 week. He had to leave because he had his business that he had to go back to. So he couldn't stay for the second week. I was kind of wishing he could. I'd love to see what was going to happen. Everything about the Buddha's teaching is about understanding how mind's attention works. Understanding. When you're practicing your generosity, you have three different parts to do with the generosity. Generosity in your speech, saying things that are nice and kind to other people. Generosity in your actions, doing and helping other people physically. Generosity in your mind. Thinking of other people very kindly. It's a lot harder to do than you think, especially when some people come up and they're real annoying. But when you let go of your attachment to not liking that person, you start recognizing that they're acting in a way that you don't like to act in yourself. They're pushing your button because you don't like that in you. I had an experience in the last few months. My mother died. My family doesn't get along. They say things that are very hurtful. They say things that are very cruel. And because I'm a monk, they tried to get me to get angry at them. Mm-hmm. And before I went into that situation, I made up my mind that they could say anything they want, I was going to send them loving kindness. They could do whatever they want, I was going to send them loving kindness. And they tried. They tried to make me angry. They did their best. Because they've known me for a long time, they knew where I used to be, very sensitive, and now I'm not. And before long, they stopped trying and actually turned into nice people. Now, why did that happen? Because I affected the world around me, even though it was negative at the time. Even though there was a lot of hurtful things that were being said, I didn't get upset by it. In my mind, I'm thinking, yeah, that's the way you are. You can act that way if you want. It doesn't bother me one way or the other. And because of the example that I gave to them, they became happy. And it confused some of them because they're never happy. You affect the world around you by your thoughts, by your deeds, by your speech. And if you don't believe me, go out and be grumpy for a day and see how everybody else treats you. And then for a week, do nothing but smile. And say things that are pleasant. And do things that help other people so that their suffering isn't so much. And think of them kindly. Watch what happens in your mind. That's what meditation is. Life is meditation. Meditation is all of life. It's not just sitting like a rock. You need the quiet time because then you can look more deeply. But that doesn't mean you quit when you get up and start moving around. It means that you carry your practice with you and do that as much as you possibly can. Okay, I've been talking for a long time. Do you have any questions?
Observation thoughts,
This is what's happening in the present moment. And your intuition. Your intuition is the thing that guides you to take this instead of that.
And intuition guided by wholesome.
It's always wholesome.
Wholesome.
It's always wholesome.
Right.
And a lot of people, they accuse me of reading minds. And I don't. But I pay attention to my intuition, and it makes it seem like I do. Mm-hmm. I don't know what anybody else is thinking, unless they're really obvious with it. But my intuition is, it's a quiet little voice that comes up and says, ask this question, say this, and I pay attention to it.
It had to be when that woman came into the monastery. You just had this feeling that she was loaded with gloom.
Well, she was walking around with a cloud around. Anybody could see that. I mean, you walk into a room where somebody's depressed. You know they're depressed.
Well, they always have a frown on their face.
Well, but if you walk into a room where a person is depressed, what do you feel like doing? You feel like getting depressed right along with them. And that's the opposite that is helpful. I've had this direct experience where somebody would come in. I knew that they were habitually depressed. I made up my mind that they could be whatever way they wanted to be. I was going to be happy no matter what. So they came in, we're eating a meal, they're just paying attention, and I'm giggling and laughing about this or that and clowning around doing what I do best. And at the end of the meal, it's time to, okay, let's clear the table. And she stopped me and she said, you're really something. I feel so much better around you. And that's because I didn't buy into her depression. I allowed her the space to be the way she wanted to be. She walked in, she wanted to be depressed. Fine. She can be depressed. It doesn't matter. I can be happy. So, the definition of compassion, allowing another person the space to have their own pain. Allowing them to have that pain without trying to change it. And love them no matter what. Be happy around them. No problem. I go into hospitals where people are dying of cancer and they're really suffering. By the time I'm walking out, they're smiling because I give them the space to suffer. But I'm going to be happy. And their mind comes up to my mind. Because I'm holding the space of happiness instead of my mind getting down into the mud and making myself miserable.
The compassion isn't sympathy now. Now, if you felt they were depressed or sad and you wanted to change their condition, that would be sympathy.
Yeah. But you try to do that by taking it away from them and it doesn't work.
Right.
There's a lot of articles today that people write about compassion. And they say compassion is there was an elderly man who retired and decided to do compassionate work, and it was an ARC magazine one. And the article was about him expounding on how he wanted to do this compassionate service work, but he was more tired now than he'd ever been, and it was really wearing him out. Now, see, there's something wrong with that.
That's how people turn out doing that sort of thing.
Because he can't take my pain away. And like when he describes going into a room and then acting on this definition of compassion, is real and is honest and fits the universal law. But if you go in there and try to take that person's pain away, you can't do that. The pain is in the body, it has a cause, it's there. Mm-hmm. So that's where the definition of compassion gets stuck a little bit.
And the odd thing, I went to this to see this man in the hospital, and I walked in, and it was like really gloomy in the room. And he said, "Everybody out. I want to talk to Reverend." Okay. So I'm sitting there. Everybody leaves. He got this little teary eye. And he said, "The doctor just told me I'm terminal." And I started laughing and said, "That's okay to be terminal. I'm terminal too. We're all terminal. It's okay to be terminal." And he started laughing at how depressed he was. And he was no longer depressed. And then we started talking about, yeah, your body's going to die. Nobody can pass that one over.
But who's dying? I mean, you can go there.
I mean, the fact is, your body is cancer. It's failing. So be happy. And he was. And he practiced loving kindness right up to the end.
Your mother did well.
Yes. But she knows she had my support. And he died with a smile on his face, looking at a picture of somebody that he really loved. Nice. There's no sense in being depressed. Of course, we all think we're going to live forever.
You kind of forget that Buddhism is about seeing things how they actually are, and that if we carry and accepting it. But if we take that and carry it all the way out to everything in our life and start using that information, we don't do that very often. We just say, "Oh yeah, it's about seeing how things actually are, and that's what it's about." But we don't carry it through to, "My mother's dying of cancer, and this is right in front of me, impermanent suffering and no self." Right there, the impersonal nature of everything is taking place. Mm-hmm. But we know this, the knowledge is there, but we haven't quite turned it over to watching this whole thing happening right in front of us in any other different situation.
I heard it said, like, we know there's impermanence, but we live like you're going to live forever.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, this is one of the big reasons that people are really into the concept of the God, because they want something that's the same today as it was yesterday, and it's always going to be the same. But nothing is the same.
I drove for 1,700 miles trying to figure out one thing that I could tell him after 3 days of driving was permanent. Mm-hmm. And I walked up to the door and knocked and said, "I've got it." He said, "What?" "Impermanent." It's permanently there in the whole universe with everything, absolutely everything.
All changing. Yeah. And it only makes sense. You go down to what's in an atom. There's stuff that's moving all the time. There's vibrations and movement that's happening. You can't go down to even a quark without having some movement and vibration. So why do you think anything else is happening?
That's a total.
He's our resident skeptic.
Yeah, but the trees really did talk. Got you there.
Yeah. So trees actually do have voices, and if you quiet your mind down, you can hear them. Sometimes they're very happy, especially at the start of a rain, and they haven't had any rain, but they start singing.
They flutter. Have you ever noticed it? And if it's a dead day.
He didn't believe it.
Yeah, you can be in a field with a forest around you, and there's no wind at all, none.
Yeah.
And the clouds are coming in, and the rain is going to come in.
So he goes up for a walk, and he goes by these trees, and they started talking to him. He comes back to me, and his eyes are this big, and he said, "You really mean trees talk?" And I said, "Yes, of course they talk. You just have to quiet down enough to listen." And he said, "Well, these trees were asking me to make sure that they wouldn't get cut down." trees that want to be cut down, there are some trees that don't. So you pay attention. And they are still alive and kicking because of that. But he's our skeptic. He doesn't believe anything unless he actually sees it. And even then, I think he doesn't believe a lot of it.
He's the one who's not from Missouri, but it's
the right. He's got the show me stuff. Any other questions? Okay, let's hear some more then. May suffering ones be suffering free, and the fear-struck fearless be. May the grieving shed all grief, and may all beings find relief. May all beings share this merit that we thus acquire for the acquisition of all kinds of happiness. May beings inhabiting space and earth, devas and nagas of mighty power share this merit of ours. May they long protect the Buddha.